Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. For 2.5 weeks, testimony in the federal courtroom shocked some and confirmed the fears of others. Witness after witness described an elite unit of the Baltimore police gone rogue, stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash, drugs, guns, and luxury accessories while pretending the seizures were legitimate law enforcement. The trial ended last night with Detectives Daniel Hersel and Marcus Taylor convicted of fraud, robbery, and racketeering. WIPR reporter Mary Rose Madden covered the trial, and she's here with me in the studio. Good morning, Mary Rose.
Good morning, Sheila.
What was the Gun Trace Task Force?
Well, the Gun Trace Task Force was a specialized police unit of plainclothes detectives and officers, and they were supposed to be taking illegal guns off the streets.
And they did a lot more.
They did a lot more. That's right. So, let's see, 8 convicted officers at this point, and those convicted officers, one officer was on the Gun Trace Task Force and not indicted, and many officers took the stand and said he was not involved in the illegal activities of those who were convicted. Those officers were convicted of racketeering conspiracy, and wire fraud, that is, filing false timesheets and overtime claims.
Well, and as you reported for NPR, they essentially shook down. They would find targets not to enforce the law, but to shake them down.
That's right. Yep.
At least that was the testimony.
Right. So there were a number of things that they would operate, that they would do. They would patrol the streets looking for high-stakes drug dealers. They would stop folks who were driving fancy cars or people that they suspected had a lot of cash on them. And when they found them, they would say, well, we're not going to arrest you, even though they had committed no crime to begin with. And they would say, can you tell us, if you were to rob someone, who would it be? If you were to rob a drug dealer, who would it be? And they would go after those folks, take their guns, take their drugs, take their money. They would, as they testified, Officer Gondo testified, these kinds of folks, these drug dealers, weren't going to go to the police station and ask for the rest of their money. If money was, submitted to evidence, they weren't going to ask for the rest of it back, or they weren't going to ask for the drugs that were confiscated off of them. They weren't going to ask for those back. So they, took advantage of that situation.
Somebody who was waiting for a verdict on the steps of the courthouse yesterday, Alex Hilton. Yep. Tell us his story.
So Alex Hilton, 46 years old, lives in East Baltimore. He'd been watching the trial. He had a very emotional and strong reaction to the verdict. He had been, he said he had been victimized by Daniel Hersel for years. And we have some tape from him.
I saw the cuts on his wrist. That's when I knew it was over with. But for him to have this disciple effect on me all these years, I just had to come there. I came there every day during this trial. It just was that bad.
Is it totally over with? Probably not. It's a lot of more work to be done, and it's going to start from the top up, but hopefully this brings awareness, because a lot of people, I don't believe they believe some of these stories are true, but they are, and it's crazy, because we're talking about cops.
So Sheila, so that piece of tape kind of talks to an important thing that folks in the community have been telling me and telling other reporters for a long time. And that's that, for years, a lot of people didn't believe them when they told these stories of police planting evidence, coming into their homes and robbing them, assaulting them on the street. And now we have the DOJ investigation that came out a year and a half ago.
The Department of Justice.
Right. And we have this expose on the police department, and we have all this information, and we sort of have to wonder. For years, these people were trying to tell judges, jurors, the public, us, and we didn't listen. And so now, folks are thinking, this should be a big win, but doesn't quite feel like a big win, because no one's sure if it'll be taken as, well, these are just a few bad apples, as folks have said for years. And D'Souza, acting commissioner D'Souza said, and Mayor Pugh has said, these are just a few bad apples, or whether this is just evidence that this is a rampant problem in this police department.
While the jury was out last week, we spoke with another of your colleagues covering the trial, Alec McGillis, who writes for the investigative site ProPublica. He drew a connection between the trial and the city's homicide rate.
One thing I found so remarkable about this trial and so important about it is that it helped you understand better what's been happening the last couple of years with the homicide spike. I really believe that it revealed the sort of the depth of the troubles between this police force and the community that it's meant to protect in a way that we hadn't understood before. And it helped to understand why the levels of trust are so eroded in the city as regards the police force, why people are so unwilling to come forward and give tips to the police or testify on cases. And one reason for that great mistrust is that members of the community have seen behavior like what was being described in this trial. And it goes way beyond even what we already knew from the Freddie Gray case. It goes to this whole level of corruption that really helps you understand why people feel such distance and such distrust with this force. And that goes right to the homicide spike and why we've had such trouble getting tips to the police department about who's doing this killing.
That's Alec McGillis of ProPublica. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Kast, and here with me in the studio is WIPR reporter Mary Rose Madden, who has covered the trial and covers the Baltimore Police Department. We're talking about the guilty verdicts of Detectives Daniel Hursel and Marcus Taylor.
So, Sheila, can I say something about that? So that,
sure.
That's a really interesting point. So there were a lot of connections between the spike in crime and the police corruption, and there's lots of things you can look at. For instance, at many pressers, Baltimore police pressers, they would lay out all the guns that their detectives had taken off the streets. And thinking back now, I am remembering all of these times when they're showing us all these guns and yet the crime is going up. And so, I'm thinking these corrupt cops were taking guns off the street, trading them in for days off, unofficial days off, because that's what the police department wanted to show the public that they were doing. They were taking guns off the street, yes, but they were doing it in these illegal ways. And so, that kind of connection is important. And also, speaking to what Alex said, for a long time, people have said, not everyone, but a lot of people in these neighborhoods that are, predominantly poor and black in Baltimore, said they really are hesitant to call the police if they needed them, if there was a robbery or if they saw something, because they weren't sure who was going to show up. Was it going to be a good cop who was going to be, trustworthy and listen to their story, or were they going to be harassed and somehow be put in the middle of this problem?
Some people have called for a complete overhaul of the Baltimore Police Department, a tactic that was used in Camden, New Jersey. And I know you've looked at this. The force disbanded there in 2013. Officers mm-hmm. were allowed to reapply for their jobs. What led to that in Camden?
So in Camden, New Jersey, it was a police union, but they didn't bust the union. They let the officers reapply for their jobs and form a new union. And what led to that was a public call for, the officers to for a complete overhaul in the department. Sorry, can I say one more thing? I wanted to bring this important point up about something else that Alec kind of brought up, is that how the trust has disintegrated over the years between these neighborhoods, these communities, and the police department. I think it's really important, and it sometimes gets lost, that the FBI caught these cops, not the state's attorney's office, not the police department's internal affairs division. They heard Detective Gondo on a wiretap with a childhood friend who is a drug dealer. The DEA, the law enforcement agency, the
Drug Enforcement Administration.
Right. So they heard Detective Gondo, and that's what sent them to the FBI, and the FBI set up wiretaps and bugs in one car. And so I think that, a lot gets put on the police department, but it seems like the state's attorney's office really also needs a good looking at.
And of course, Mayor Pugh and Police Commissioner Designate D'Souza and others issued statements after the verdict that about their plans to rebuild trust in the police department. But there is so much facing the force right now. Alec McGillis called it a watershed moment.
To think about how many different things are now kind of crashing together at this one moment for this one force, it's just mind-boggling. I mean, you have this huge trial, which in all likelihood is not over yet. I mean, the FBI has made clear that they're still looking into all this, that there may yet be more indictments. There were certainly names that were popping up here and there in the trial of people who were still on the force, often in positions of real authority. Then you have this huge consent decree, federal consent decree, which is just starting to roll out. Then you have the whole effort to sort of beef the force back up in terms of basic numbers and recruitment. You have a new commissioner. You have the other proceedings going on around the officers who were improperly using their cameras, their body cameras, and sort of reenacting crime scenes with their body cameras. You have the whole mystery of what happened with Detective Souter, which is to some extent tied in with this case. We don't know how much. So it's just, I don't even know where you begin really to think about what this. Oh, and then of course you have on top of that, overarching all of it is the terrible homicide spike, which is tied to all these different things.
It was Alec McGillis of ProPublica. What do you think, Mary Rose? Where do things go?
Well, let's see. There's a lot of work to do. And as someone told me, you know, this is just one case, and one case is not going to fix everything.
And I know you'll be following as people try to pick up these pieces and figure out what goes. These detectives face a maximum of 60 years sentence. U.S. District Judge Catherine Blake has not set a date for sentencing. And as you mentioned, six of their former colleagues have pled guilty in this federal racketeering case. Mary Rose, thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Sure. Thank you, Sheila.
Reporter Mary Rose Madden covers police and reform initiatives for WIPR. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Short break now. When we're back, we'll hear from ProPublica's Alec McGillis about Jared Kushner's investments around Baltimore and the impact on tenants. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.